Hey there, thanks for listening to Alt Latino. You know, we wanted to let you know that NPR's Invisibilia podcast returns with season two. The show explores the invisible forces that shape human behavior with thoughts, emotions, assumptions, and expectations. It's all explored on Invisibilia. You can catch season one of Invisibilia anytime and listen to season two starting May 20th at npr.org/podcast and on the NPR One app. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. We could do some classical stuff.
Yeah, it's going to rock. It's going to just blow your socks off.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Jasmine Garst is away this week, and you know what that means. I get to invite a musical pal to come and talk about music. And this week, we're going to explore classical music from Latin America with my colleague and my pal, Tom Huizenga, NPR Music's classical music guy. Tom, welcome.
Hey, Felix, thanks. I'm psyched to be here. It's tough shoes to fill with Jasmine being gone. But
we'll do our best.
Yes.
Tom writes the Deceptive Cadence blog here at NPR Music, and he's here to remind us that classical music is an important part of Latin American musical tradition. And we play a lot of different styles, a lot of different forms, a lot of folkloric, a lot of contemporary. But I tell you, I learn something new every time I talk to Tom about classical music, and that's what we're going to do today. And what are we starting with? What are we hearing underneath?
Well, just a little dance that we'll start with, a kind of an improvisation called the Dance of Montezuma from Jordi Savall and his pals.
This week is also going to be a bit of a history lesson as well, because we're starting way back when and moving our way forward. So what are we starting with?
What we think of as classical music has a super long and vibrant history in Latin America. I mean, all the way back, at least past the 16th century and up to today. You know, Felix, I was reading in this magazine here, Gramophone, which is a classical music magazine. There's an article about the BBC Proms concerts, and they're focusing on what this year? Latin American classical music at the 2016 concerts. If you don't know about those, it's 8 weeks of concerts, mainly at London's Royal Albert Hall, 8 weeks of concerts every single night, classical music. It's a big classical party, and part of it's going to be focused on Latin America. So I thought we'd start by going way back, and a lot of the action, you know, happened in Spain, because the Spanish were ones that were traveling all over, bringing the European-style music over to the New World and other places, and also absorbing that music and bringing it back to Spain. So one of the big hitters back in Spain, born 1548 in Madrid, Tomás Luis de Victoria, he composed music mainly for the church. And back then, you know, there wasn't this division between pop and classical like we have today. It's basically, back then it was either church music or it wasn't. This guy wrote some of the most beautiful church music here from his Requiem. Just listen to how these voice groups fold in, reaching higher and higher, like toward the ceiling, some vaulted ceiling of a cathedral or something.
Thank you.
Okay, that was music from the church. What kind of non-church music did you bring?
Yeah, that was from Thomas Luis de Victoria. We'd call that high Renaissance music, and he was really one of the best, and something from his Requiem there, performed by the Talis Scholars, a British group. That's church music, right? And I know this is a family show, more or less.
More or less.
But I couldn't resist bringing in some erotic dancing from the 17th century. Ready?
Yeah, where's Jasmine when we need her? She's always bringing erotic music from the 21st century.
Well, this goes back a long ways. And we're going to stay in Spain for this guy called Santiago de Murcia. He was born also in Madrid, like Victoria, but in 1682. And he was a guitarist who actually went to Mexico, and where he got to know some of the more exotic dances from the New World. And some of these dances had already been brought back to Spain by the time he visited there. And we're talking dances like the zarabandas, the chaconas, the zarambeques, and this style of dance called the cumbes or cumbes. That's spelled C-U-M-B-E-E-S. And these were particularly risque, thought to have been brought to Mexico from West African slaves. And some observer writing way back in 1626 was saying, "It appears that the devil brought these lewd bailes out of hell." And someone else was writing, the dance is done with shaking and wiggle wagging and swaying of the hips, all contrary to common decency. And then he goes on by saying, they fondle each other, embrace arm in arm, and belly to belly.
Scandaloso.
Ay, Dios mío. And we thought the waltz was bad. So here's a little bit of the cumbes dance. You're NPR Music's rhythm king, we know that. And so what did you hear going on there?
You know, there is quite a bit of like the offbeat, where the beat is on the and, in between beats.
Uh-huh.
We're moving through time and space. Where are we going to next?
All right, let's take a little quick trip to the jungles of Bolivia. European classical music came to South America during the time of Johann Sebastian Bach in the 1700s, to Peru, Bolivia, Argentina, and largely by way of Jesuit missionaries who set up churches. This fascinating recording we're going to hear now was born out of a discovery made in a church, the Church of Concepcion, in the Bolivian jungle near Santa Cruz, where they found in the 1990s all these old Baroque manuscripts. And a British group called Florilegium flew down to Bolivia, got together with some Bolivian musicians, took these manuscripts and made this recording. Music from an Italian composer here called Zipoli. I mean, I think the fascinating thing about this is that some of these European composers, got disseminated in different spots in South America and in the New World, and these manuscripts were, who knows? I mean, they were sitting in this Church of Concepcion in the Bolivian jungle for several centuries.
What we'll never know is how this music influenced the musicians that heard it. And maybe even performed it in Bolivia.
Right. You know? Now, this guy who wrote this music, Domenico Zipoli, he was an Italian, and he was recruited as a Jesuit missionary and He actually never made it to Bolivia, but he did go to Argentina, where he died in 1726 of tuberculosis. But his music obviously spread further afield than that. Now we're moving up in time just a little bit to Louis Morrow Gottschalk. And Gottschalk is a fascinating person. He was America's first musical superstar. He was born in New Orleans in 1829 to a French Creole mother and a European Jewish father. He was a child prodigy, went to Paris to study at age 12, and was compared to Chopin at the time when he was giving his concerts and for his compositions. But he really had the Caribbean in his soul, because he came back and started the touring in the States in 1853, then spent 5 years in the Caribbean, especially in Havana, soaking up all of those sounds. He came back during the Civil War and played thousands of concerts during the Civil War. And his life ended back in South America, where he was doing what he loved most, touring. I thought we'd listen to the song called La Bambula, the Danse de Negre, or the kind of the dance of the Negroes. And it's based on a dance that Gottschalk saw and heard as a kid in Congo Square in New Orleans. Bambula refers to this bamboo drum that would have been heard in Congo Square, I understand. You can hear that in the left hand of the piano pretty strongly.
And Congo Square is the part of New Orleans where the slaves were allowed to congregate and play their drums, which was prohibited in the rest of the United States. Throughout the Latin America and the Caribbean, they were allowed to keep their drums, which is why places like Brazil and Cuba have a strong African element to their music. But here in the United States, the drums were forbidden, except in Congo Square, where they were allowed to congregate, I guess it was every week.
We have to remember that Gottschalk was born in 29, and in 1803 was a Louisiana purchase. So there's thousands and thousands of people from what we call the West Indies back then, all coming to New Orleans and creating that amazing melting pot. I know you know this book called Cuba and Its Music by Ned Sublett, right?
Oh, yeah.
Super book. He has a little bit about Gottschalk in his book, and he says about Gottschalk, after visiting and absorbing the music in the southern black United States, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Martinique, Guadeloupe, Venezuela, Peru, Argentina, Chile, Brazil, on top of his Parisian training, Gottschalk must have been the most musically erudite American in his day. This is La Bambula from Louis Morrow Gottschalk, played by Cecile Lacade, a pianist who grew up in Manila.
Years ago, thanks to the magic of public radio out in California, I heard a station play a week-long series on classical music from Latin America, which is where I learned a lot of the big names, and we're moving to one of those big names next.
Getting ready for the Brazil Olympics.
There you go.
In the summer, we got to talk about the big guy from Brazil, and that's Heitor Villa-Lobos. Before we talk about it, let's just hear a little bit of his music, A Portrait of a Little Train Ride Through the Brazilian Jungle. Thank you. Get that all aboard feel? It's a little portrait of a train headed up through the backwoods of northern Brazil. It's called the Little Train of Caipira, and it's from Heitor Villa-Lobos, Brazil's best-known composer. And he did something really cool. He took the spirit of Johann Sebastian Bach, whose music he admired, and then he made this interesting marriage of that with the spirit of folk music from Brazil in these 9 different pieces, and they're for all different instrumentations, and he called them Baquianas Brasileiras, and this is number 2. He gave each movement of these pieces 2 titles, one in a kind of traditional Baroque dance form, like this one he calls Toccata, and then its kind of subtitle is The Little Train from Caipira.
You know, one of the things that I got from that radio show that I told you about earlier was discovery of a song that has become one of my favorite recordings and songs of all time, and I'm so glad you brought it today.
It's another one of the Baquianas Brasileiras, and I guess if anybody knows one piece of music of Heitor Villa-Lobos, it's probably this one. It's the Baquianas Brasileiras number 5, which is scored for cellos and solo voice. And I love this recording too. It was made back in 1956. And it's the aria version of the Brasileiras number 5 with Spanish soprano Victoria de los Angeles.
For so many reasons, that song's one of my favorite songs, and not the least of which is her amazing performance.
And it's cool because that's the composer, Villa-Lobos, conducting that recording from the 1950s.
The other thing I learned from that radio series was that Mexico played a very big role in establishing this part of the world as a really big contender in creating classical composers, and we're going there next.
2 very different composers born in the same year, 1899, and I guess if Mexico had a good cop and bad cop of classical music, it would be these guys, and they are Silvestre Revueltas and Carlos Chavez. And let's hear the badass first, Mr. Revueltas. This is a little bit from a piece called La Noche de los Mayas. Now, that was a conch shell. Did you hear that?
It was a reference to the way some of the pre-Columbian musicians made music back then.
Right, and it's not surprising coming from Revueltas. He led a somewhat mysterious and checkered life cut short by alcohol when he was just 40. He was a child prodigy, a violinist who studied in Chicago during the Roaring Twenties. Then, I don't know how, but at some point he led an orchestra in Mobile, Alabama. Then he was called back to Mexico to be the head of the Mexico Symphony Orchestra. He toured in Spain and started fighting on the Republican side in the Spanish Civil War there, and then made his way back to Mexico and really helped create a whole idea of Mexican classical music with Carlos Chavez. Let's hear a little bit more of this Noche de los Mayas. It's a film score from 1939, and it just gets crazy near the end.
So when you say Revueltas was the bad cop or the badass of the two, I'm assuming it's because of the frenetic energy and just the juxtaposition of all these different instruments and stuff?
I mean, you listen to what we just heard, it's just like some kind of mezcal-fueled craziness, you know? And just kind of his lifestyle was a little bit more frenetic and
rock and roll.
Yeah, than Carlos Chavez, who I guess we'd call the good cop, whose music was, I guess it's generalizing, but a little bit more academically correct. But Chavez is probably still considered kind of the father figure of Mexican classical music. Again, born the same year as Revueltas in 1899. They did know each other, and in fact, it was Chavez who called Revueltas back to Mexico to take the post as a conductor of the orchestra there. And Chavez, he was always had his ear tuned to folk music of Mexico, present, and then in this piece that we're going to hear now, he kind of imagined what it would be in a pre-Columbian era, in a piece that he called Xochipilli. And the subtitle is An Imagined Aztec Music. And here you can listen for some kind of indigenous instruments, logs and drums and rasping sticks and rattles made from butterfly cocoons.
It's also important to remember the cultural context in which these guys were creating music. They came of age just shortly after the end of the Mexican Revolution in 1920. And then they went off to study music. They came back to Mexico to build the country's reputation as a source of classical music. At the same time that was happening, there were people like Diego Rivera painting murals. There was Manuel Alvarez Bravo doing these amazing things with photography. It was an incredibly artistic period at that time.
Well, and Chavez started the premier music conservatory in Mexico in 1928, and then he went on to help start the Institute of the Arts in the 40s, which gave birth to the beautiful Palacio de Bellas Artes in Mexico City. Have you ever been there?
Oh, I always check in. Yeah. Go see the murals when I'm there.
And that piece that we just heard is Xochipilli, and it's an imagined Aztec music, as if we would know what the pre-Columbian music sounded like. And actually, Chavez wrote that in 1940 for a big exhibit of Mexican art that was happening at the Museum of Modern Art in New York.
Jasmine isn't here, but she'd be happy to know that we are now moving on to Argentina.
Yes. For Jasmine, but not just for Jasmine, because this guy is a really great composer, Alberto Ginastera, whose 100th anniversary of his birth just happened a couple of weeks ago, and there's still an ongoing festival of his music happening in New York right now. Let's listen to a little bit of his music, and we can talk a little bit more about him. This crazy dance from a ballet that he wrote called Estancia. This is called Malambo, and it refers to that Malambo dance. Did you know, Felix, there are Malambo superstars in Argentina? Jasmine could probably tell us about these. It's this dance that they still have Malambo competitions, and it's a male-only dance. It's kind of a stamping dance where they move their feet and stamp really quickly, almost like tap dancing, but more forceful. And the people who participate and win these competitions are treated like royalty in Argentina. It's amazing. We'll be right back. It's music from Alberto Ginastera. He died in 1983. He was an important force in not only the music of his home country, but on the world stage, too. He, in 1971, wrote an opera for the opening of the Kennedy Center here in Washington, D.C.
Really?
Yeah.
Speaking of opera, that's where we're going next, at least briefly.
We should definitely talk some opera because I love opera and I love to see how it keeps morphing and changing. And we've had, you know, rock operas before and we've got jazz operas. So why not a mariachi opera, right?
Love it.
Here's some music from an opera that is called Cruzar la Cara de la Luna. How would you translate that?
To cross the face of the moon.
And it premiered at the Houston Grand Opera in 2010. And the music is by Pepe, or I guess his real name is Jose Martinez, who's the director of the famed Mariachi Vargas that goes back in Mexico for, I think, at least a century or so. The opera is really about three generations of a Mexican-American family in Texas, and they're at the sick bed of the patriarch who's kind of in these fevered dreams remembering his past. And here's a little, just a little bit of a scene where his wife from many, many years ago is talking about how her husband, like many men in their village, crossed over to the U.S. to try to make their fortune.
Renata, tienes la casa más bonita del pueblo y te la construyeron tan rápidamente.
7 años no es tan rápido.
It starts out with this almost operatic style recitative, and you can hear the music is very mariachi-like.
Ay, Lupita, ¿cómo le haces sin tu chucho? Yo no puedo más.
There's two characters kind of moving the action along.
Esta vida no es natural tener un pueblo entero sin hombres.
And then all of a sudden we get kind of the formal aria or the song.
No es fácil estar sin él. 6 meses pasan muy lento. Los otros 6 vienen aquí y no nos rinde el dinero. Antes podía soportar pobreza con la tristeza. Cuando él no estaba acá, no aguantaba mi cabeza.
Have a mariachi opera, we should be able to have a salsa symphony, right?
Of course.
The composer's name is Roberto Sierra. He's in his early 60s now. He's from Puerto Rico, but he hangs out here in the States mostly. And he calls his third symphony La Salsa. And this is a brand new recording by the Puerto Rico Symphony Orchestra with Maximiano Valdez conducting. And it's a symphony in 4 movements, so very, very traditional there. But he gives them these dancing titles, tumbao, habanera, danzas, and then we'll hear a little bit from the final movement, which is called Holgorio. And Felix, you'll be the judge on this. He tries to mix in merengue from the Dominican Republic and plena from Puerto Rico in some of this movement. So is this the merengue right here?
You know, that little drum beat underneath that started it, that's approximating
the
merengue. And the very intricate 16th note melodies on top, there's a lot of that in plena.
Uh-huh.
Because there's more of guitar picking and
right.
A lot more stringed instruments in the plena.
So he's messing with this a little bit, but he's got the spirit of those dances in there.
Juxtaposed over each other. It's clever.
Yeah.
It's very, very nice.
So this is music of Roberto Sierra. He's been shortlisted for a Pulitzer a couple of times, and I hope one day he wins one because his music is terrific, and that is from a record that was just released a couple of weeks ago by the Puerto Rico Symphony Orchestra.
Tom Huizinga, Thanks, man.
Felix, it's been a pleasure to be here. There's so much more we could talk about in Latin American classical music.
I would really like to do that. And let's hear from our listeners out there. If you would like to hear more from a particular country, a particular era, or just more in general, you can reach us at NPR's Alt Latino on Facebook and Twitter. You can also check in on our website at npr.org/altlatino. We always love to hear from you, and we want to remind you that Jasmine will be back next week. Again, Tom, thanks so much for coming in and bringing all this great music. This is Alt Latino, a classical.
Thanks, Felix.